I made some new merch designs. Do you like them?
I don't know. I think they're pretty cool.
Link in bio.
Hey, friends who live in Canada, what do you think of Canada?
What do I think of Canada? Let's see. Well, when the snow melts, you get to witness the minefield of dog poop that people didn't pick up.
It's cold, but I like the cold because you can keep layering until you're warm. But in the heat, you can only get so naked. And then you just have a sunburn on your butt.
Every summer I leave Arizona to visit my family in Canada because we like seeing them and they're really great. And yeah, we also don't like to live in a volcano. We normally have a non-stop flight, but this one particular trip we decided to do a layover to save some money. I think it was July 2012, so I was like 14. A couple days before our flight, my mom realized that my brother Jack's and my passports were expired. Well, this is either gonna go over well or it isn't. Oh, it was so much worse. We got to the flight check-in and they said, "Hey, these passports are expired." Obviously. But it was only by a little bit, so the guy was nice and said, "Okay, I'm gonna let you all through and inform your layover about what's happening. But get those renewed soon." So we were like, "Yay, crisis averted!" But wait, there's still 95% of the video left. That's because we were wrong. We landed in Minneapolis and the people said, "Hey, these passports are expired." Obviously. "Oh, yeah, we're sorry about that. The man at the Phoenix airport let us off with a warning and said he contacted you about everything, and..." Well, crap, I think we're actually stuck in Minneapolis. I guess this is our new home now, get used to it, kids. So it was my scared mom and her two expired children stranded in this obscure city. We went to a pharmacy, which for some reason also takes passport photos, but we had to wait until the passport place opened the next morning. Mom was having an aneurysm panic attack, but didn't want us to worry, so she was like, "Hey kiddos, time for an adventure! Adventure time!" She took us to the Mall of America, which is the biggest, craziest mall in America, with four floors of shops, entertainment, a mirror maze, bowling, roller coasters, aquarium. I've never seen anything like it. There were so many things to do. How could we choose what to do first? Roller coasters in a mall? Four floors? A kid's paradise? People get married in that mall. We ate at the food court for 20 minutes and left because it was closing for the night. We found a hotel and slept in our clothes, even though we had our luggage. I remember on the light rail I said to Mom, "You know, I really like it here." Like the oblivious child I was, not knowing the weight of the actual circumstances. Having a grand old time listening to a High School Musical playlist on an iPod and playing with my stuffed animals. I freaking love stuffed animals. As a kid, I couldn't sleep without them. My favorites were Raoul the mouse and Ringo the raccoon. I've had them for years. Anyway, luckily, Minneapolis is one of the few places that has one day turnaround for passports. For the cost of an arm, a leg, and your entire savings. So in the morning, we had to check out of the hotel, run to the passport place, and make it to the airport in time for our new flight. It was gonna be a tight schedule, but it was doable. We were on our way to get the passports when, in the middle of transit, I realized, "Mom, I forgot my stuffed animals in the hotel." But no, it's alright, I don't need them. It's okay, really, it's not a big deal. I left Raoul and Ringo in the hotel, and Mom was already having a mental stress breakdown, and I was not at all wanting to contribute to any more of that, but Mom, being the kick-butt awesome parent she is, defeatedly pulled out her phone. "Hello, yes, we just checked out this morning. Would you check room 421 to see if there's two stuffed animals in there?" "Ma'am, there's someone currently occupying that room." And that was super weird to hear because we literally just left the hotel. How did someone already fill up the room? Turns out we just called the wrong hotel, so we got transferred to the right one, and they said they'd hold them for us to quickly pick up. So now the schedule was, arrive at the passport place right as it opens at 8 a.m, get passports, run back to the hotel to grab Raoul and Ringo, rush to the airport before our 1 p.m. flight, and I'd also like to point out that the last shuttle to the airport leaves at 12 p.m, so if we miss that shuttle, we're screwed. Remember, things were different back in the days of 2012 BU. Before Uber. Back then, the idea of paying to jump in a car with an unlicensed stranger wasn't very popular. At the passport place, we walked up to the desk, and the first thing they said was, "So both parents are present, correct?" Actually, he's 1,645 miles away. No. There was a solution. We could get in contact with Dad, send him a form to fill out, get it notarized, which means legalized by a notary, which means a person licensed by the government approves it, which... Okay, we don't have time for this! We have to prove the paper is legal, but there's a problem to that solution. It's 8 a.m. in Minneapolis, but 6 a.m. in Arizona, which means notarizing places aren't open. Now, my mom knows a lot of people, and one of her best friends is actually an accountant, which means she can get it notarized when she goes into work and get it sent back super quickly. Which, what are the odds of that? Mom, we should buy a lottery ticket if we actually get to Canada. So quick! Woke Dad, got the form filled, called the friend, did the thing, got the thing back, and somehow everything was accepted and we weren't expired children anymore. And off we were running down the city to get back to the hotel to grab Raoul and Ringo. Okay, I'm gonna insert a tiny story detail. We left our luggage at the hotel so we wouldn't have to be dragging it everywhere, which means we would have had to get back to the hotel anyway. But it's much more intense to think that grabbing the stuffed animals was an extra step we didn't have time for, so shh, we're gonna continue. We were sprinting to catch the light rail. Jax and I were running ahead, and for some reason Mom's knee started hurting and she started slowing down. Are you okay? And she was just like, go, I'll catch up, just get to the train, go without me! We made it. We sonicked into the hotel, grabbed Raoul and Ringo, and the luggage we were already coming back for, reached the shuttle before it left, and finally fell into the airport.
Yay.
Sitting at our gate, waiting for the plane to swoop us off to Canada land with their moose and their poutine and Niagara Falls.
Well, technically, Niagara Falls is made up of three different waterfalls, and the U.S. actually owns two of them. But I guess Horseshoe Falls is the biggest and most popular, so...
Mom suddenly realized that she forgot my dad's letter at the passport showing that both parents consent to us, the innocent, helpless, pathetic children, crossing the border. In the past, security always asks us to show that consent paper, so Mom couldn't even have a relaxing plane ride being stressed out of her mind that we would land and still couldn't pass the border. After all that, she didn't tell us she was worried because she was already doing a frickin' dang good job of hiding the weight of what was going on, so she held it in the entire flight. But she told us afterwards and we gave her a slow clap. She deserved more, but we were kids.
That's all we had.
We approached the security booth, gave them our shiny new passports. They looked at my mom, my brother, and me. Have a fun time in Canada. They didn't ask that time! My mom, every time she tells this story, always says, they always ask, they always ask, they didn't ask this time. How the frick even, they always ask! And that was that. We got to Canada. That's it.
Wow, that was a lot of effort to come here.
Yeah, I mean, Canada's alright, but you guys have that Mall of America.
Okay, yeah, sure, cool. But I mean, we have West Edmonton Mall, which has an indoor water park and a theme park.
Wait, really? That exists? Well, I guess that automatically puts us on top then.
We were always on top, Dom. We are America's hat.
Woo, yeah, Canada. I had to ask my mom the timeline of events during the whole thing because I was young and don't remember anything but eating in Mall of America and forgetting my stuffed animals. Big thanks to Domix and Ginger Pale for being Canadian and also helping with lines. They're great buds. This is hopefully the last time I mentioned this in an end card, but I'm still interested in finding other animators. I talked about it in the Apples video, but this is the last time I'm bringing it up, I promise, I think. I'm still looking for animators to help me with scenes because I want the videos to be more animated. The videos I did in the past on my own are pretty bland looking, and I want to be able to have more quality animation in videos without taking 6 months to finish something. I know people are against me asking for help on videos because my channel has that homemade, it's just a normal person. And doing YouTube for fun feeling. I'm not professional at anything. But a normal person can't make 7-minute fully animated videos every couple of weeks on their own. Some people might prefer 1 or 2 videos a year that are done only by me, and I get that. But I like posting videos more frequently, not only because it helps the channel and me stay alive, but a lot of people enjoy more videos, and I'm able to support really talented animators I'm working with. That's my take on the situation, and you don't have to agree with me at all. But I'm really trying my best to think of you and me and everyone. Okay, thanks. Send a portfolio to jadenanimationsanimator@gmail.com if you're interested. Info in the description. Have a good rest of your week, and here's Ginger Pale being Canadian.
Moose maple syrup, a healthcare. Poutine.
When I say I was almost in Squid Game, I specifically mean Netflix's reality show version, not like the actual one where people died. Sorry for a bit of a bait there, but also I'm not lying. So before I get into that whole story, I need to explain how I was even put in that situation to begin with. Early last year, Jacob, our friend Joe, my brother Jax, and I all went to this little Squid Game pop-up event hosted by Netflix. It looked interesting, to say the least. A combination of curiosity and boredom are what convinced us to buy tickets. Our Uber took us to the location provided, and we were dropped off at a scary back alley in the streets of LA. Are you sure this isn't a setup for, you know, the real thing? We hunted down the entrance, headed up Squid Game-themed stairs, and inside was a big lobby with merch, snacks, decorations. You know what else was in there? No other human beings. We were the only ones there, along with the shape guys that were just staring at us. Are you sure this isn't— I don't know anymore! Staff signed us in and gave us numbered wristbands. Whoa! It's like Squid Game! Eventually, more contestants showed up, and soon enough, we were herded into the starting room, decorated very much like no one actually cared about this thing. And if they did, corporate ruined it. The staff guy gave us the rundown on how the event was gonna work, all the rules, such and such. But sprinkled throughout the explanation were, like, a lot of safety hazard jokes. I know the concept of the whole thing is rooted in playing dangerous games and dying and ooh, evil dystopian. But he was saying things like, don't lean on the walls, you might rip through it, and I don't want to fill out any paperwork if you hurt yourself. Don't touch anything that you shouldn't touch, I don't want to have to fill out paperwork again. He was very anti-paperwork, like way more than the actual human safety part. Based on what we've seen so far, our group knew we were about to experience exactly what we were hoping for, but with not the death part. For the first game, we were led into a room with lines of glass squares. What? It's like Squid Game again! The glass jumping part! When it was your turn, the pattern on the 10 squares would be shown, and you needed to memorize which tiles to step on. It's like— well, I guess it's kind of like Squid Game. Kinda. Eh. The first batch of people stepped up, the patterns all flashed, but before anyone could begin stepping on glass, they were instructed to hold it and only take one step at a time. For the whole game, we had to watch everyone take one individual step, stop, wait to be confirmed, then take one more step. For 10 spaces, in like 6 groups total. Also, I think that whatever mechanism they used to track if people were out or not was super busted, because literally only like 5 people in total got their pattern right. Joe, Jacob, and Jax all swore they memorized their pattern correctly, but were eliminated anyway. I know I botched mine up though, I've got paper shredder brain. They could give me one tile to memorize and I would still forget it. 25 of the 30 people failed their very first puzzle. Now, Netflix knew that if people paid $40, yeah, 40, to be in this shitty little Squid Game event, and then had to go home after the first game, they would be pretty upset. So the rule was, for the first 4 challenges, no one would be eliminated. Yay, woohoo, phew, that was a close one. In the next room, they tried to combine both the honeycomb game and the marbles game from the show, but what was put together was, throw marbles in the shape on the table to win other people's marbles. It was very anticlimactic. Unfortunately, we were only able to gather in groups of 3, so Joe wasn't able to join us. Instead, he was paired up as a third wheel to a random couple that was obviously here on a date. Jax cleaned up shop on us, he got all our marbles within minutes. But over at Joe's table, malicious injustice was afoot. Apparently, the 2 people that were in a romantic relationship ganged up on Joe, and after taking all his marbles, just split them up between each other. Despite there being no actual stakes in the game, Joe was furious simply out of principle and swore to get revenge on them somewhere, somehow. Before he could even start any beef, we were brought into the next room, and again, we're split into groups, this time of 4. They really liked group activities in this thing. Walking through the doors to the challenge, everyone was stationed around a respective gift coffin. After opening them up, it was revealed we were gonna be playing a big version of Operation, the game where you try to pick up fake little organs with fake medical tools without touching the sides. So, simulated surgery. Like, I guess that was kinda in Squid Game. At least they decorated the boxes like it, but I mean, we're really pushing it at this point.
Jacob and I randomly got paired up with this married couple, and the four of us started inspecting the tools, when suddenly, the woman goes, "Oh, will you pass me the forceps?" She's a surgeon. Oh my god, we just happened to be paired up with a lady whose literal job was operation. The challenge began and the three of us took our hands off the tools, she cracked her knuckles, and we watched as all the plastic organs were suddenly out of the prop body. Not surprisingly, our team was the first to finish. When we got back together with Joe and Jax, we explained how we got super lucky to be paired up with an actual surgeon that literally soloed the whole thing, and Joe was like, "Wait, that guy was a surgeon?" And Jacob and I had to shake our heads and say, "No, Joe, she was a surgeon." Damn it. Now that we were entering the fourth challenge, it was time to get serious. This was the first game where people would start getting eliminated for realsies. But not realsies. Everyone was split into two groups and taken to one side of a wall where there was a bunch of prop boats. It was a kind of not really IRL version of Battleship where we had to try and shoot down all the other side's boats and the team that won would progress into the fifth game. I would describe this idea as good enough. Sure. You know, we didn't get to choose where to put our boats since they were bolted to the floor, but I guess we did only pay $40 to be here. For some reason, though, the staff member on our side was, we can call it, extremely helpful. At first, he was saying general tips, like, "So if they still have a four-tile boat, let's check all the areas that could fit that." You know, saying vague hints to help us out a bit. But by the end of it, he was just straight up telling us, "If I were you guys, I would shoot right here." Like, this guy wanted us to win, and win fast, so either he had some kind of bet going on with the other staff members, or dude just had places to be. All the other team's boats were sunk, and the remaining 15 or so people were led into the semi-final game. It was obvious as soon as we saw her, we were finally playing the classic red light, green light. It was decorated like the show, the doll was there, but there were giant gift boxes scattered around the room to act as obstacles, because when you think about it, red light, green light isn't high stakes when staff can't actually shoot the contestants. Like, something had to be added to spice it up a bit. We gathered on the starting line, and the game started. As we were playing, I was thinking, how are they measuring if we're moving or not? You know, I doubt they recreated the entire motion tracking doll thing just for this pop-up that's getting torn down after a month. I figured the only thing they could be using to track motion is our wristband, so in between the green lights, I focused extra hard on making sure my wrist stayed as still as possible. In fact, I was focusing so hard on my wrist that I didn't even realize I was the first one to pass the finish line. Unfortunately, similarly to the janky glass memory game, it seemed like a lot of the wristbands were super wonky as well because a lot of people got pinged as eliminated no matter how still they were, including Jacob and Jax, which was a huge buzzkill. Either that or they were just built to be super sensitive and somehow my weak little carpal tunnel wrists decided to not shake for the first time in 5 years. I turned back to see just three people left, one of them being Joe. They all lunged forward, and as red light was called for the final time, I watched as Joe tripped and crashed into them, causing every person left to topple to the floor. Their wristbands deemed them eliminated. As Joe was walking past me to the dead area, I asked what happened, to which he said, "I got him." Joe had intentionally sacrificed himself to bump those people because they were the couple that ganged up on him during Marbles. He had finally gotten his revenge. Was it petty? Yes. Did he probably ruin their date? Yes. But do I also not care and think that was the funniest shit ever? Absolutely, Joe is awesome. I was somehow the only one in our group moving on to the final round. Me and the other four winners of Red Light, Green Light were brought into Squid Game. And everyone else was there too, watching from behind a little rope. "Jaden, Squid Game is so rough and tough. How did you fare against the four other dudes that made it to the end? In real Squid Game, the guy got stabbed. Did you get stabbed?" you're probably wondering. And oh dear viewer, no, I did not get stabbed. In fact, I didn't get hurt at all, because Netflix didn't want to deal with paperwork. Instead, we played hold a fake egg on a spoon and attack each other until there's one egg standing, but attack in a way where there's no paperwork. Which is fine with me, because I doubt any of us actually knew how to play Squid Game anyway. The buzzer rang and everyone started shifting around in the shape. Since I, for some reason, have experience in high-stakes game tournaments, I deployed my signature strategy of don't bring attention to myself. I simply dodged and weaved between the guys swiping at each other's eggs. I can take someone on in a 1v1, but any number higher and I've gone well past my capabilities. Eventually, there were just 3 people left. The crowd started yelling, "Get the girl! The girl's still in!" And the 2 guys started walking towards me. But then my personal peanut gallery chimed in with, "Hey, hey, hey! They're ganging up on the girl! Boo! Shame! Boo!" And that flustered them enough to back away again. Apparently, the power of teamwork and fear of misogyny can persevere through anything. Suddenly, an egg hit the floor. It was just me and non-woman-hating guy number 2. The exact 1v1 I was trying to create. We circled each other, both our spoon-holding arms stretched out as far as they could go. He swung at my egg a couple times and I managed to dodge, but I couldn't win this thing if I didn't go on the offense. Wait, what if I just... I won the silly little Netflix Squid Game pop-up. The front man came out and escorted me to the VIP area where he gave me a plastic animal mask, like in Squid Game. And we took awesome photos together, and I got an awesome t-shirt that said "Winner." And I didn't know it at the time, but as this was happening, the staff pretended to shoot all the losers with fake gun sounds. Unfortunately, I didn't get the 45.6 billion money prize like in the show. But along with the t-shirt, they did give me a special form to fill out that would give me priority application for Netflix's actual Squid Game reality show, Squid Game The Challenge, Season 2. I looked at the form and thought, you know, we'll just see what happens. Filled it out and was able to bring my friends back to the VIP room with me, because winning isn't fun unless you do it with your friends. That's what Squid Game taught me. There were a bunch of snacks and alcoholic beverages in the winner area, and I gotta say, the alcoholic squid drinks were probably the worst things I've ever tasted. It was astonishing how bad they were. Over a year later, and I can still imagine it. I don't even know what ingredient could do that to a drink. Anyway, after I submitted my form, I half expected to never hear anything about it ever again. But to my surprise, Netflix reached out to interview me about potentially being a contestant on the show. In fact, I was forwarded to the next round of interviews 3 times to completely break any potential rules of confidentiality. I was starting to think there might be a chance I could actually be on the show. But eventually, the interviews came to a stop, and I have come to the conclusion they have moved on to better qualifying people. Most likely because, I will admit, I was a bit too honest during the interviews. They basically all just looked like this. What kind of a role do you think you would play in Squid Game as a contestant? I'd probably just be a follower. I don't like taking charge at all. How hard would you fight to win Squid Game? Not that hard. Have you watched the first season of Squid Game, The Challenge? No. Well, I watched the first 20 minutes, but I turned it off because I thought it was really badly paced and boring. So that was that, and I'm okay with it. Or who knows, maybe they saw my very strange track record of winning game tournaments and got scared.
It kind of seems like those kinds of really intense and active game shows like Real Life Squid Game end up having a lot of people complaining about how they got hurt or weren't treated all that great anyway. So I'm glad I'm sitting safe and sound in the comfort of my own home. I'm glad I'm not dealing with Squid Game related injuries, in fact. Also, very quick reminder that Techwear merch is going away soon. If you're late to watching this video, it's probably already gone, to be honest. Sorry. I tried to warn you. Thanks for watching, though, and see you later.
I just played one of the best Pokemon games ever, and I'm here to tell you all about it. I'm a huge Pokemon fan. Ruby was one of the first video games I remember owning, and I've decided to devote the rest of my life and soul to the franchise. And by that, I mean I'll play the new games when they come out. Do I have to like them? No. Frankly, I think the past few recent ones have been kind of garbage. But that won't stop me from getting my hopes up, thinking the next game will be different, even though deep down, we all know it won't be. But Pokemon does have a few side games you might have heard of, like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, or Pokemon Stadium, or that weird geometric one. But there's one franchise that I feel like doesn't get talked about nearly as much as it deserves, and that's Pokemon Ranger. I had the original Pokemon Ranger game as a kid, and I remember two things about it. I liked it, and circles. Lots of circles. The flashbacks are beginning. When I remembered Pokemon Ranger existed, I decided to look it up and see if it was worth possibly making a video on, and that's when I realized there were actually three Pokemon Ranger games. Pokemon Ranger, Pokemon Ranger Shadows of Almia, and Pokemon Ranger Guardian Signs. Bit of a Pokemon Ranger mouthful, but I digress. I was looking at some forums of people discussing which one they thought was the best, and the Shadows of Almia one seemed to be high on a lot of people's lists. So I bought the game. Now sit down and get comfy because I just played this game for the first time and I'm here to tell you about why it's the best game ever. The game starts off with your character taking the entrance exam to a Pokemon Ranger school, and it only took me two attempts to draw five consecutive circles around this barely moving Pikachu. You're dang right, that's impressive. I guess that's all it takes, because now I'm officially a member of this secret army for this inscrutable team school plotting to rule the world. Oh, he's just kidding. Yeah, it's a normal school. I'm introduced to my class, and for some reason they've been, like, starved for new human contact or something, because they're bombarding the teacher with questions. Are they a boy or a girl? Which is it? Is she cute? So I'm introducing myself, and apparently the teacher catches this Keith kid looking at me with a big grin. Anyway, you go sit next to Keith. Oh, okay, just plop me right next to him. Yeah, I don't mind or anything. Thanks, Teach. Anyway, you get a tour of the school from this girl with me, meeting the other teacher, Mr. Kinsade, who's apparently a stickler for making sure kids don't run in the hall, and this kid, Isaac, that Rhythmie called Mushroom Hair. Both my IQ and my height in centimeters are 163. Alright, bud. After getting a feel for the school, you're taught how to capture Pokemon with your styler. Loops portray the feeling of friendship, so the more loops you draw around the Pokemon, the more it will submit to your friendship. That's nice. Touch the Bidoof. You finish the school day and are fast asleep in the dorms when all the students decide it's initiation time. Get up, sleepyhead, it's 4 a.m. time for your student initiation. Yes, sirs. They tell you to find all four of the stylers they've hidden around the giant school, and after doing so, you have to put them in the basement for some reason. So you head down there after finding them all and are in the basement when, "Why are you down here? Only I'm permitted to be in the basement. Leave now!"
Anyway, Isaac, have you finished testing my very secret experiment no one can know about?
The rest of the school year goes on without any big problems. Pokemon Ranger Crawford comes and talks about what it's like to be a ranger. You save the milkman from some Bidoof. You attend a one-day internship at the local Pokemon Ranger base, and they make you bring them their lunch as an important mission. Actually, while you're at the internship, someone runs over and says the Pokemon on the beach are acting strange. You go with the rangers to check it out to see all the Pokemon going crazy, and save the day by capturing them with your loops of friendship. But yeah, that's weird. Finally, you make it to graduation. Jaden, come up and make a speech as the class representative. Oh, I'm the class representative, huh? Well, don't mind if I... So after saving everyone from a very strange rampage of Tangrowth, you start working at the Pokemon Ranger base you interned at. There's a call about some more Pokemon acting strange down in a nearby cave, so your first mission is to investigate what's going on. In the cave, you stumble upon this weird missile-looking machine that seems to be what's hypnotizing the Pokemon in its vicinity and making them go crazy. So you destroy it and everyone's proud of you. This Professor Hastings guy is called down from the Pokemon Union to take a look at the cave machine, and I guess he's like 100 years old or something, because the Rangers want you to go meet him halfway in Pueltown to make sure he doesn't get lost and die along the way. You take one step in town, and oh god, all the Pokemon are going nuts. Turns out there's more of those rocket machines planted in the town, and as you're going around smashing them, you run into some guys that are not only very shady, but also terribly shifty. They run away to tell their leaders there's Pokemon Rangers smashing their stuff. And further into the town, you find them again with their admin, who's like, "Dude, what the heck? What do you have against our Giga Remos, you vandals? Treat things with respect!" And then attacks me with Rattata and a Toxicroak. Not gonna lie, their battle music kinda bangs, though. Turns Turns out they're part of this gang called Team Dim Sun, and after capturing their Pokemon with friendship loops, they decide to retreat. We're able to find Professor Hastings and bring him back to the base to analyze what we now know are Gigaremo machines. He finds a tiny black crystal in the center that seems to be the thing that allows Team Dim Sun to control the Pokemon. The base considers this a problem, which is reasonable. And now the Pokemon Union starts getting involved, which is like the big head honcho of Pokemon Ranger bases where all the Ranger prodigies are. The story continues as the Union tries to uncover more about what Dim Sun is up to, and you keep interrupting their plans. You catch them trying to drill a tunnel in the side of a mountain. You catch them having a secret base and cargo ship in the middle of a volcano, which Mr. Kinsade has found to be part of Dim Sun. Big surprise, didn't see that one coming. You haven't been running in the ship's hallways, have you? You catch them mining hundreds of dark crystal shards in an abandoned mine. That one was a bit of a problem because apparently there was the mother of all shadow crystals there, powerful enough to power this incredible machine they're in the middle of developing that they plan on using to control all the Pokemon within a 500-mile radius they got their grubby hands on and helicoptered away to their headquarters. Probably should tell someone about that. But the good thing is we ended up finding the diary of the Dim Sun president's father, who writes about how if we gather these three gems called the Tears of Princes, the gems will be able to combine their power and negate the power of the Shadow Crystal. Alright, let's go do that. The first gem is told to be in this giant ice castle called Alima Castle, and on the way there, you run into Dim Sun grunts trying to stop you. They're not hard to deal with, and they start getting a bit frustrated. I want to pay you with a snowball. Hard. You make it to the castle after swimming through a bunch of ocean boulders and whirlpools that totally didn't slow me down at all, and end up at the castle where Dim Sun is already running around in trying to get the gem first. These guys are blocked from going any further because this giant chunk of ice is in front of the door, and the grunts are like, man, that's a big hunk of ice. If we made snow cones out of it, we'd be able to feed like 403 people. And then they see me standing there and are all, hey, that outfit! What are they called again? Pokemon Ranger? You came for a snow cone? You deal with that whole situation and end up in the room just before where the gem is being kept, where you're introduced to one of the members of Team Dim Sun's Sinistrio, Ice. I don't know what his deal is, but he called me Jaden Noob and then dabbed, so I had to murder him. Well, I captured and freed his Froslass, and he scurried away all, well, I didn't need the gem anyway. After gaining the trust of the Lucario guarding the gem with more of my loops, the blue gem of the Tear of Princes is mine. Fast forward a bit, and you get the red gem as well after defeating Sinistrio Lavanna and her Infernape. She doesn't dab, but she does do this sexy little dance. The guy from school, Keith, who's a ranger now, was assigned to get the yellow gem and hasn't come back yet, so the Union's like, alright, Jaden, go check on him. You hop on a boat to the destination, but whoops, apparently a Wailord is in trouble. I'll just go down there and see- yep, I thought so. These Dim Sun grunts are trying to kidnap a Wailord, and after destroying the machines that were trapping it, they decide to just grab a Wailmer instead and try to convince their boss it's a Wailord mini. You follow them on the rescued Wailord and start infiltrating their base. Down a hall, you discover the grunts squishing the Wailmer through the door, and as you follow them into the room, they're like, oh crap! Shoot. Do you want to deal with the ranger? Oh no, I'm too wimpy. I know. Let's apologize. Sorry. We got the ranger's confidence. Charge! And then drop a truckload of Slackoth on me. After capturing all their Slackoth, they're like, oh no! And then all of them just grab me and shove me out of the room and lock it. Which honestly is more effective than like 99% of all video game villains. So you keep running through the base and end up actually finding mushroom-haired Isaac from Ranger School. He's been manipulated into building Dim Sun's incredible machine, and we agree to take him back to the Union after we finish up our business in the secret hideout. We finally encounter Mr. Kinsade, who's manning the Wailord operation. He's being all maniacal, but we successfully capture his Gliscor, save Wailmer, and bring Isaac safely back to the Union, where he gives us access to the incredible machine blueprints. Skipping ahead in the story a bit, we end up not being able to get the yellow gem because Heath, the last of the Sinist trio, kidnapped Keith and we exchanged him for the yellow gem. I kept trying to say no, but I guess it's good we saved him. The Union makes a plan to have their top rangers go and fly to Dim Sun's headquarters and face them head on. Jaden, You can just sit in the corner and do nothing. But right as they leave to do that, the Sinistrio busts through the Union walls and are like, ha ha ha, we'll be taking this, and steal back Isaac because they need him to complete the incredible machine by midnight so they can activate the Shadow Crystal. Isaac complied because they threatened to kill his sister or something. So new plan, now I have to get Isaac back and basically destroy the machines that were protecting their building slash incredible machine, because oops, I didn't mention this before, but they turned their entire building headquarters into the incredible machine. What? We basically just waltz right through the front doors of the headquarters. Heh, that'll stop people from entering. What? How did you get in here? And battle our way up to Isaac, who's like, you're a bit too late. I totally just completed the entire machine and they're about to use it to hypnotize all the Pokemon in the region in like 5 minutes. Well, at least your sister's not dead. So you run to the top, defeating the Sinistrio every floor of the way, and grab the last tiers of Prince's Gym. And you get to the top where you meet the Dim Sun President Blake Hall for the first time, and he's like, you're too late! It's time for darkness! Get her, Desnor! And then I capture it immediately. And he's like, just kidding! Get her, Darkrai! And then Darkrai just starts dipping me into darkness, and Keith has to come save me on his Staraptor. So Darkrai's like, well, then I'm gonna just dip these guys into the darkness, and throws Blake and his assistant into the void. Haha. But I decide to capture and free Darkrai anyway with the help of the Tears of Princes, and save the day. Yay, woohoo! I'm a hero! Time to take a nap. Now, Pokemon Ranger is a big game. It took me about 24 full hours to get through the game, so I had to leave out a lot, and I mean a lot of other points in the story. There's even a bunch of side quests that are actually pretty entertaining and funny you can complete that help power up your styler. There's one where this guy says he researches smells and wants me to bring him the stench of a muck. So you do it, and he's like, yes, and puts it in a jar. Then later on in the game, he pops up again, and this time asks for a Weezing and a Skuntank, to which he's like, yes, and puts them in jars. Then he's like, thanks, dude, and you never see him again. The dialogue is absolutely amazing. This game has probably the best writing out of any Pokemon game I know of. Team Dim Sun is obviously the star of the show, and whenever they come on screen, you know they're gonna have something funny to say. At one point, while I was trying to get into their secret base in the volcano, I captured the Pokemon they were controlling, and they're like, time to make our escape, and set off dynamite, which exploded a giant boulder and blocked the entrance to the base, which they're like, shoot, we were supposed to detonate it after we go in. So they had to wait for me to go get a Pokemon that can destroy the rock. And they're like, thanks, Ranger, we'll be grateful for this for about a second. And they run through the door. So you follow them, and they come back like, hey, we forgot about you helping us. Take this! And drop a bunch of Numble on me. Also, all of the music that plays when they're around is awesome. I was jamming out whenever I was running around their base. It's a bummer this game isn't super popular. I know it's got a small cult following, but it definitely deserves to be more well-known, and I really consider it one of the top Pokemon games out there, just on writing alone. It's not a hard game, but, I mean, Pokemon isn't meant to be a difficult game series anymore. I can see some people getting a bit tired of the capture system since it doesn't change much throughout the game, but honestly, again, I think the story and dialogue far make up for the semi-repetitive capture and battle system. Now, I know I kind of just talked about the entire plot, but if you're curious about playing it yourself, there's so much I left out, and there's still a lot to discover about the game, so I highly recommend it. I'm being honest when I say I didn't even cover a third of what happens in the game, and there were a lot of funny moments I really wanted to talk about that I just didn't have room for in the script. I'm just trying to convince you to play the game yourself at this point, because I think it's just that funny of a game. But I'll stop. But here's all my stats after completing the game. It took me about 24 hours to complete it. I captured 734 Pokemon and ran away from 106. I think that's a pretty good ratio. And look, I drew a total of 9,077 loops. With that amount of practice, I bet I'm a master at drawing circles now.
Thanks for watching the video on me drawing circles for 20 hours. Huge thanks to the team for their hard work. This video was massive. and it turned out amazing. I've mentioned this before, but I've been enjoying the video game videos a lot, so if you have a weird game you think I should take a look at, let me know. A lot of people have already been requesting this game called Elite Beat Angels, which is some sort of rhythm game with male cheerleaders, which looks amazing, but I think that video would get mega copyrighted, so unfortunately I don't think I can play that on YouTube. It looks really good though if you want to check it out. Anyway, I don't have much to say this time, so see ya later.
This is Asperia, a beautiful place known for its breathtaking scenery, gorgeous mountains, bustling villages, and secrets around every corner. In a forest somewhere, Jaden can be found playing with Ari and Tofu, her loyal bird companions. She lays back, happily enjoying the sunlight as Ari runs around, disturbing the wildlife, and Tofu eats dirt. Jaden is the region's very own wildlife biologist. She documents every new animal she encounters in her ecological guidebook, hoping to one day discover every mysterious creature Asperia has to offer. Ari and Tofu help in their own ways, I suppose. As she's writing down this interaction in her book, for scientific purposes, of course, a flock of fruit doves flies by overhead. Jaden immediately recognizes them from their bright white feathers and loud screeches. Very obnoxious ear-piercing screeches. Oh, how nature sure is a blessing sometimes. Just as they pass over, one of the bird calls spooks Ari, who was too distracted with bullying the rat. In a burst of panic from the sudden shrieks, Ari takes off and starts flying away in a fit of confusion. Ari? Ari, stop! Hey! Come on, dude, you're being dramatic! Jaden calls out to her bird, but he's already too far away. Even if he could hear her, he's way too stubborn to listen anyway. Well, this is just great. After hours of searching for Ari in random bushes, trees, caves, Jaden finally admits defeat and starts heading to the nearby town of Hollowstone for extra help in finding her bird. Luckily, she immediately spots a noble Hollowstone soldier. Perfect. I'll just go up to the guard and simply ask him if he can help me find Ari. I need your help! It's an emergency! We need to alert the town! Ari the bird is missing! He's gonna die out there if he doesn't eat his daily five-course meal! You gotta help me, man! Please, help me find Ari! Oh my god, woman, calm down! Just as Jaden was calmly talking to the guard about the dire situation, someone approaches. It seems like they somehow overheard the conversation she and the soldier were having. Typical eavesdroppers. The person asks Jaden what happened, but she's too distracted by the fact the traveler has two funny little hamsters with them. Hamsters? Who are you? Are you looking for a duel? This is unfortunate because I'm missing my strongest battler, Ari, so you outnumber me in creatures. But luckily, bird-type attacks are super effective on hamsters, so it shouldn't be— Whoa, chill out. I'm Merlin. I heard you need help with finding your lost bird. Phew, they're just here to help. Jaden wasn't really in the mood to wipe the floor with this kid's hamsters right now anyway. To help, Merlin asks Jaden which forest she was in when Ari took off. Wait, the forests have names? This might be a bit trickier than everyone originally thought it would be. As the new little team starts retracing Jaden's steps, they determine the area she was most likely in when Ari flew away was the south side of Ryham. Probably. Luckily, the Hollowstone soldier knows a villager over there that commonly feeds the birds. If anyone were to see Ari, it would definitely be him. With a fresh lead, the Hodgepodge crew head off together on their new quest to find Ari. They can only hope he's not gotten himself into too much trouble, but knowing him, it's quite inevitable. This was the start to the quest line of Jaden and her birds in the game, and also this video's sponsor, AFK Journey. Me and the AFK Journey team have collaborated to put together a fun little campaign that includes Jaden, me, Ari, and Tofu. It's also the first time I've ever been featured in a video game, which is really cool, and it'll be active from September to November, so I hope you get to try it out. The new season, Waves of Intrigue, is out today. There's a link to the game in the description for you to download for free. Waves of Intrigue brings with it a wealth of new content, including a brand new map area, the bustling hub city of Rustport, new game modes and characters to recruit, fishing and sailing mechanics, and so much more. There's even new intense pirate and mafia elements that you can explore and immerse yourself with. On top of it all, they've added even more stories and trials to beat if you're up to the challenge. Challenge. AFK Journey has given me a code for you all to punch in. Use code Tofu and Ari for some exclusive rewards. The link is down below, or you can use this handy dandy QR code. The game is beautiful, massive, and definitely has so much for you to uncover and discover throughout the entire world they've created. I hope you'll give it a try. Thank you again to AFK Journey for not only sponsoring this video, but also putting me into their game in such a cool way. Thanks for watching!
Hello everyone! Sorry I haven't uploaded in a while. As you know, as most of you should know, I was really busy working on the new IS Cupcake animation, the Surgeon Simulator one, but I am back and I'm working on my next animation for you all. But for now, here's some questions that you've sent to me through Twitter and DeviantArt. Where do you get your animation ideas for your channel? I've just gotten all my ideas from society and the world around us, whether it be from noticing things, just walking around, embarrassing real-life experiences. So basically, all the stories that I'm animating for you all are just from the juices of life. Do you have any animation tips or tricks? When I was just starting, like I said in my last Q&A, my first animation experience was a huge project, and at the time I had no idea how to actually animate or do anything, and it was scary, it was intimidating, so I would say don't start off with a huge idea or skit because chances are it'll get overwhelming, it'll get confusing, you don't know what the heck in the world is going on, so start off with the basics. I don't know, like a bouncing ball or a walking guy, just to get an understanding of the animation process, and then you can go from there. Will you make animations for other YouTubers? I would love to work with other YouTubers. Working with Cupcake is so awesome, they are amazing people, and I'd love to reach out to some other YouTube channels. I've recently become obsessed with British YouTubers, so I feel like it'd be fun to work with one of them. My favorites are Dan and Phil, most of you should know them, and I feel like they would have some really great animation ideas. Maybe you guys can help me get in contact with them, like tweet them or something. I don't know. Moving on. Am I Team Torchic, Team Trico, or Team Mudkip? Pokemon Ruby was the first ever Pokemon game I ever played, and it's my favorite. And the first time I ever played through it, I picked Torchic, and ever since I was hooked, I love Torchic. Torchic is bae. Also, Blaziken is tied with being my all-time favorite Pokemon ever. Not to say that I dislike Trico or Medkip, I still love them both, but I always go with my fiery karate chicken. What is 2 plus 2? Do I need to? If I could be any animal that matches my personality, what would it be? This is kind of a funny coincidence because in junior high, I was in a class and somehow we got on the topic of deciding what animal I would be, and apparently the class thought I would be a bunny, so I guess being a bunny wouldn't be that bad. You know, hopping around, eating grass, until you're savagely eaten by a coyote. But, you know, besides that, that'd be pretty cool. How big of a Pokemon fan are you? You all do not understand. I am such a big Pokemon fan. I've played almost all the main games, some side games, I have merchandise, and I actually play it competitively. Yes, there is a technical side to Pokemon that many people are not aware of. It includes complicated things like EVs, IVs, natures, stats, abilities, stuff like that. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, then you are not ready. Once you are enlightened, you can never play it the same way again. You have been warned. Do you like drawing traditionally or digitally? I started off drawing on paper just like anyone else would. Crayons, markers, stuff like that. So I was always used to paper when I was growing up. But when I got my first drawing pad, I started drawing digitally a lot more. And now I really like drawing digitally just because it's so much easier to fix things or undo something. Control Z is my god. So I am much more of a digital drawer now. Do you play any other games other than Pokemon? I'm just a big Nintendo fan. All my favorite games are made by them. I love Animal Crossing, Kirby, Smash Bros, Mario. Kate and I love playing Cooking Mama together because we raged when we ruined the dish by washing all the rice down the sink or burning the beef in the stir fry because the stupid onions wouldn't cook fast enough. I basically enjoy all the cute cartoony games. What is your advice for people learning to draw? I would say, don't let anything discourage you. If you're passionate enough towards drawing, then you need to keep doing it. Practice literally makes perfect when it comes to drawing. One tip that I figured out is, you shouldn't compare your work with other people's. Everyone draws differently, they all have their own style, and comparing yourself only discourages you. Also, listen to what other people say about your work. Don't just, quote-unquote, block out the haters, because the art world is based on criticism and how people perceive your artwork, so listening to other people's points of view can help you grow as an artist and get better. Well, that's all the questions I have time for. Thank you to everyone who sent one in. If you want to ask a question for the next Q&A, be sure to follow me on Twitter and DeviantArt. I love you all, and goodbye!
Okay, before I even say anything, let's lay out some ground rules. This is probably gonna be the most open I'll ever get about my personal life. I know I've shared tidbits of myself and life through little stories, but when it comes to personal stuff, I'm very private. Especially within the past few years. I'm gonna be talking in very general, surface-level terms because specific personal details are for me to know, and in the nicest way possible, none of your business. Basically, this is something I want to talk about, share, and bring a spotlight to. But at the same time, you get the Cliff Notes version. So no trying to assume or guess anything beyond what I'm sharing within this video. At the end of the day, we're all just strangers refusing to listen to the Stranger Danger rule. Alright, formalities aside, let's get into it. I've come to realize that I'm Aro-Ace, which stands for Aromantic Asexual. And I know what you're thinking. That's not gay, what the hell is that? And you know what? That is completely fair, because I didn't know what that was either. Aromantic and asexual are two different things, and I'm gonna break them down to you separately, starting with aromantic, because no one really knows what that one is. And also, it's my personal favorite. Someone who's aromantic is defined as a person who feels very little to no romantic attraction to anyone at all. So, like, they might not develop crushes on people, or feel the need to be in a romantic relationship with anyone. Very general terms, but hopefully you kinda get the gist. If not, here's a little story example from me. Growing up, I never developed crushes on anyone. I remember when I was in fifth grade, kids were talking about their crushes left and right, and it was starting to feel like something I had to experience too, just because I thought that's just what happens. Don't make fun of 9-year-old me, I was a sheep. Anyway, I decided I needed to have a crush because that's just what happens to people. And I very robotically chose this random kid in the class who we can call Pikachu, that's not his name. He didn't mean anything to me and I didn't do anything about this crush, like I didn't tell anyone or anything. It was just a headcanon thing for me to feel up to speed and like I was hitting my normal human emotions quota. But it's funny because on Valentine's Day, you know how in elementary school everyone would bring cheesy Walmart Valentine's cards for everyone in the class, and then you'd have a box full of candy and hollow emotions from everyone. Well, my school did that. When I went through my box, I pulled out Pikachu's Valentine and thought to myself, someone who has a crush on someone would keep this. I think. So I put Pikachu's copy-paste Batman Valentine in my drawer and promptly forgot about it because it meant nothing to me, but hey, that's just what I thought I was supposed to do. Man, I'm so good at this. Then like a year or so later when my mom was going through my room, she pulled out the card and was like, why do you have this? And I was like, honestly, I have no idea. Years passed, I entered junior high and thought to myself, alright, this is the time where people start developing crushes and then do something about it. Like get into relationships or something. So I was like preparing to be interested in people. On the first day of school, I scoped out the room to see if there was anyone that I thought looked like someone I could develop a crush on. And this was when classes started being divided up into periods, so there were like 6 batches of people I sifted through. But no one caught my eye, and I thought, man, unlucky. Went through the whole school year, next year rolled around, classes changed, I did the same potential crush scoping again, and the same thing happened. I wasn't drawn to anyone at all. Man. Unlucky again! Every year, I thought something would change, especially going into high school when people started actually hitting puberty and were getting conventionally attractive. But my entire school life, grades kindergarten to senior year, which I'm pretty sure is like 13 years, I wasn't interested in a single person throughout any of it. And what's funny was I was thinking, man, what's the deal? Why is no one attractive? And I went to a big high school. There were like 3,500 students there. Surely I am not the outlier in this formula.
Why are none of you attractive?
By the time I was going to college, I really felt like I had to find someone. It felt like I was falling behind the curve, or if I was gonna find someone, it was gonna have to happen now. I made a lot of new friends, and that's when I thought I developed my first genuine crush. Long story short, in hindsight, no, it wasn't a crush, and I was just wrong. I just met someone who I thought was cool and funny and had a really strong desire to be close to them. But looking back, knowing what I do now, it wasn't in a romantic way. I realized I can get very excited and tunnel vision on people I think are really cool or interesting, and kind of obsess over getting to know them or just want to spend a lot of time with them. But whenever I got into those tunnel vision moments, if I sat down and asked myself if I actually wanted to be in a relationship with them and hold hands or cuddle or kiss, the answer was not really, but if they wanted to, I could go along with it, which I do not think is right. In my very old flirting video, which I refuse to rewatch, I think at one point in it, I said something along the lines of, if you're interested in someone but they just want to be friends, I don't understand why some people can't deal with that. And that was primarily because I didn't realize there was an emotional difference between a crush or falling in love and just being really good friends with someone. So, oops, sorry for the bad take, I think. I really just thought having a crush on someone was wanting to be their number one best friend. Look, I said don't make fun of me. To me, it used to feel like if I was wanting to become friends with someone to that high of a degree, that would be the next step or justify why I wanted to put this much time, effort, and energy into one person. And it didn't feel right or even fair going through all of this with someone and then tell them they're just a friend. I don't know, it just didn't feel like it made sense, even though I really didn't technically see them in a romantic way. I just didn't understand what was going on really, or that there was supposed to be real emotions and instead of a logical understanding of steps. And the fact that I was under the assumption that I was supposed to be interested in people in a romantic way didn't help with anything. I always preferred to say good friends, but never felt like I could have that, and I worried that if I said no, that we would just start drifting apart, which I obviously didn't want either. It's been a very long journey discovering this about myself. Everything I'm saying has all been extremely subconscious and not understood or defined for many years. I even used to think I was bi or pan for the longest time because I would think to myself, well, bi is being interested in both genders. I don't really care for either, but zero is equal to zero, so I guess I'm bi or pan. I got math involved. If I knew what aromanticism was when I was growing up, things would have been a lot less complicated for me a lot sooner. I think it's mainly because people don't really talk about it or even know what it is or that it's real. Romance and love is the number one most talked about topic on the planet. Everything I've been taught or learned through society is that love and romance is everywhere, everyone feels it, and it's gonna happen to you. Just a funny little note, there was a point where I was listening to some generic romance song on the radio, you know, like all of them, and I just suddenly thought to myself, wait, do people actually feel these things towards each other? Like all these mushy lyrics are real emotions? They're not joking? And that's when I started feeling like something was different. I approached romance under the blanket term thought of, sure, why not? And didn't recognize it was actually a feeling. Which might sound stupid, but look, I don't know. No one presented me with any other options. I did a lot of rationalizing. If someone ever expressed romantic interest in me, I would mentally make a kind of logical list of their pros and the pros and cons of what a relationship would look like with them based on what I knew about them as a person. I didn't realize there was supposed to be an extra, like, excited feeling, or the fact that you're not supposed to think about it as if it were a business exchange. I understand compatibility is a huge important variable when it comes to sharing a relationship with someone, but at the end of the day, it's still, apparently, still a very emotionally driven thing. And I literally had to make that discovery and teach it to myself. Now, I'm gonna talk about being asexual very briefly, and I'm gonna preface it with, let's all just be mature about this, alright? We're all pretending to be adults here. I've got my eye on some of you. Behave! Okay, this is definitely treading into uncomfortable personal boundary territory for me, but yeah, I do want to share that I'm asexual too, which is defined as someone who feels little to no intimate attraction to anyone.
Look, I know we said we're all adults, but I'm still gonna dance around the vocabulary, alright?
Yes, there's a difference between romantic and intimate attraction. Little side note, I will say you can experience romantic attraction to someone but no intimate attraction, or you can experience intimate attraction but no romantic attraction. You can be one and not the other, it's not necessarily a package deal. Most people feel both, and I do not feel either. Anyway, I have never been magnetically attracted to the look or shape of a single person in my entire life, and did not realize it was a real thing until very recently. I'm able to identify when someone looks conventionally attractive, like by textbook definition, but I never realized people are genuinely drawn to people they think are attractive. I didn't know that people could just see someone and be like, wow, they're gorgeous. I would love to get to know that person, or maybe go on a date with them, or whatever else you people do. I didn't think it was real. I thought people were exaggerating or something. I don't know. And I also couldn't believe that some people feel that with multiple people. Or like celebrities, which sounds absolutely exhausting. It ties back to when I was in school, like looking around for people to like. It makes sense now that no one caught my eye because that doesn't happen to me. I was just wasting my time for 13 years. I feel like such a fool. Now, there's an easy assumption to make about asexual people and that they all have zero interest in being intimate with anyone at all, which actually isn't true. Some of them are genuinely turned off by it, and some aren't. Some reasons would be that they just don't mind it, or they want to make their partner happy, or enjoy the emotional closeness of it. There's a million different reasons and a million different people. Am I sharing what kind of a people I am? Nope. And you don't know me personally enough in the slightest to be able to try and parasocially analyze where I stand on that spectrum. I'm just here to say I am this. We are moving on. When I stumbled onto the term aroace and started realizing I fall into that category, it helped me feel much more confident and sure of myself. I've read a lot about how people say they felt broken or that something was wrong with them, but honestly, I was the complete opposite. Coming from my very biased perspective, I think aroace is one of, if not the coolest and most confident orientations out there. Not needing a single gram of romantic or intimate validation from anyone is so cool. All you need is yourself to be happy, maybe friends and family too. And birds. The more I came to terms with the fact I'm aroace, the more empowered and capable I felt. But at the same time, I was also starting to feel more alone and isolated. As cool and amazing and unique and awesome as I think it is, it can be really hard for other people to relate to or even understand. Everyone else and their orientations are able to bond and relate to the love and romance aspects, and we're over here like, we don't do that. I don't even know if I'm explaining it very well. It kind of does go against everything everyone's ever been taught about anything. Romance is taught to be a basic assumed emotion, which I do think is a bit misleading. A common argument used against the aroace orientation is that romance and intimacy is what makes someone human. But I mean, I don't know, lots of birds mate for life, which is a better ratio than people. And all animals get frisky. You know, that's just how they became not extinct. It's not an exclusive to humans thing. If I were to guess, I would assume the thing that makes someone human is basic empathy. Like, I'm not an emotionalist monster. I can still love people. I love my family and my pets, just platonically. And I would hope that you're the same. I just don't experience romantic love, which, I don't know, I don't think that's harming anyone. Definitely not me. I'm having the time of my life. I don't think you need to be in a relationship to be happy. And if you don't want to be just on your own, I think there's many types of people in relationships that push the boundaries of what a conventional relationship looks like. Telling someone that they need to be in a romantic relationship to be happy and fulfilled is weird. And then when that person says they're not happy, they're told relationships take a lot of work, and that's just how it goes. And that's also weird. I don't know. I also think it's weird that once someone reaches a certain age, people inherently start thinking it's sad they're not in a romantic relationship, or assume they're lonely and sad. No one thinks a child is sad and lonely just because they're not in a long-term relationship. I don't know. I don't get it. And I also think I'm rambling. At the end of the day, it's all very complicated to talk about these things, especially because I don't know the feelings I'm supposed to be feeling, let alone talk about. I just know for me, the terms aromantic and asexual are able to articulate things I was subconsciously feeling and thinking before I even realized I was feeling and thinking them. I don't plan on talking about this very much, if at all, ever again. I just want to play my silly little video games, maybe tell a story here or there. But I wanted to bring the orientations to the surface and try to get more representation out there, because I thought if I could help more people become more aware of this, then that would be awesome. I was confused as hell for a while and could have used something like this. It's a real thing. You don't have to feel any sort of romance or whatever to be considered a real person. Personally, I think it's really cool and badass. And don't be afraid to look more into aromanticism or asexualism if any of what I said in this video resonated with you to any degree. Like I said, this is all very surface level stuff. They're both much larger spectrums than you'd think, and maybe you fall under some umbrella category with them. I don't know. Or not. Either way. This has all been my personal experience with this stuff. Is there more for me to figure out within it? Yeah, I'm pretty sure there is. It can get pretty complicated and confusing. Haha, awesome. Will I be sharing any of that with you? Nope, no way, this is all you get. Hope you can understand even just a little of what I talked about. And if not, that's totally fine. I just hope you can be nice. Thanks for listening. I never really intended on making this video because I haven't really felt a strong urge to, like, I don't like using this phrase for myself, but come out. But I did end up wanting to make the video to make people more aware of this stuff, because I think it's important, and someone has to. There's not really that many people doing it right now. Anyway, yeah, just moving forward, I guess. See you later.
Alright, yeah, I know I just made a video about school stuff, like, a couple weeks ago, but you know what? I just gotta vent a little here, okay? You'll understand in a bit. For my graphic design history lecture, we had to make a 3 to 4 minute video summarizing every chapter we covered during the semester. And the horrible twist was, it was a group project. Now, the thing about a college lecture is that you don't know anyone. You come in, sit down wherever you want, listen to the professor talk for like an hour and a half, and then you leave. Maybe one time you'll forget a pencil and have to ask the person sitting in front of you for one, and then you forget to give it back and now you have some random stranger's pencil. But they don't care. No one cares. Welcome to college. When the professor dropped it on us that it was a group project, everyone was like, oh god, friggin', now I gotta pretend like I know these hockey pucks. Basically, everyone just turned around to the closest person around them and was like, you want to be in a group? Okay. I ended up with these two other girls, and because I don't want to say their real names, I just googled most annoying girl names, and Google gave me Renice May and Blood Rain. Anyone out there named Renice May and Blood Rain, I'm sorry, I'm sure you're a wonderful person, but Google has spoken, so. So now I've got Renice May and Blood Rain here in a group with me. The project was assigned to us, like, beginning of April, so we had about a month to get it done. We wrote down our contact info and went on with our day. I was pretty swamped with work at the time, so I wasn't too concerned with getting started right away. 2 weeks pass and no one was saying anything. At this point, I decided to take initiative and make a group text. Hey guys, it's Jaden from Design History. We should probably start thinking about the project soon. When are you all free? I didn't get a response, but you know what? It's fine. I'm sure they've got their own stuff to do. I won't judge. It's not a big deal. Another week goes by, and I still haven't heard anything. Alright, time to get serious. We've got a week to do this now, and we've got nothing. We've got one text in a group chat saying that we should start thinking about the project that no one's answered. That's what we've got. I took double initiative and decided to get things going by splitting up the chapters evenly between us. There were 7 in total, which meant that one of us was gonna have to cover 3, while the others only had 2. I was nice and gave the 3 chapters to myself. Group project chivalry. Then I set up a Google Drive project so we could all work on it without needing to physically get together, and texted everyone again. I made a plan with them that Monday. Meet up on Friday to record our notes and slides so we'd have the weekend to edit the video for next Monday. I know, not as creative as I could get, but I wasn't about to go crazy overboard here. Okay, we've got a good plan. Not too much stress, a bit last minute, but it's all organized, so it's not that bad. I had a lot of work during the week, but I got my slides and notes done and was ready to film on Friday. But Thursday night, I get a text from Renice May. Hey, so I can't meet up with you guys tomorrow because I have something going on. Huh. I got that feeling, like this was the start of something really bad. The little snowball of horribleness that was about to start barreling down the hill of f*** you and crash right into my little cabin of composure. What? I mean, we planned this on Monday. You should have told us that it didn't work for you or something came up. What about meeting over the weekend? I have work from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. This
frickin' before too much time passed, I updated Blood Rain on the situation. We came to the conclusion that we could just do audio recordings of our notes and edit them on top of the slide so Renisme could record on her own time. Alright, back on track. Bit of a bump there, but it's all good now. We've still got a solid plan. Back when we were still planning everything, we decided as a group to have Renisme edit the video, but I decided, yeah, no, I do not trust this girl. I'm gonna edit the whole video. I know, it's not balanced at all with the amount of work I had to do compared to the other girls. But you know what? It's fine. Whatever. It's better than worrying all weekend about if Renisme even knows how to upload a video to the internet. I get a text Friday morning from Blood Rain. I'm at the library, we're still meeting up, right? What? I asked her why, and she said, to record. Okay, we don't need to meet up for that, but I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. Maybe she doesn't know how to record audio or something and she needs help. So I head over to the library with my microphone and we get a table in the corner. Alright, so just read off your notes into the mic and I'll put them in the video. And you know what this girl does? She starts reading the most horrendous notes I have ever heard in my entire being. This girl, this is what she did, right? When I made my slides in the project, I had terms, vocabulary, and key artists from the chapter. The notes look like this. A few main points and terms, and then a couple artists. The reason they looked so barren is because in my audio, I was going to explain them. This girl, Blood Rain, literally looked at my slides and said, alright, this is what I have to do. Wrote her notes exactly like my slides, and thought she could just read them like that without any details or cognitive thought. Are you kidding? How did you even pass grade preschool? I just sat there in disbelief while the girl read the saddest excuse for notes in the most unenthusiastic monotone voice you could imagine. When she was done, she just turned and looked at me like, I'm done. Do you have any notes explaining what you talked about? No? Okay. Can you get some notes explaining all your terms and artists? Because for the video, we have to explain why you put them in the video, you know? Oh, okay. I got back to my dorm and had to take a breather. Okay, that was pretty bad, but it's fine. She'll fix them, send them to me, and I can get started on the video. No big deal. Things seem pretty crap, but I'm staying optimistic. It's fine. Okay, guys, so can you get me your audio by tonight or tomorrow so I'll have time to edit the video by Monday? Thanks. They both sent their audio to me past midnight on Saturday. Alright. So I've literally got one day to basically do this entire project now. I'm pretty ticked about this, but I'm too tired at this point to get angry. Like I said, I had a lot of work to do during the week, and I just don't have the energy left to exert being mad. I woke up at 8 the next morning and got to work. Okay, so first things first. I've got to edit all our audio together. I opened up all our clips and put them into the audio software. Remember how the video is supposed to be 3 to 4 minutes long? This was 16 minutes. What the frig? That's 400% over the limit. I'm laughing because it hurts. Their recordings went past the time limit just on their own without anything else. Oh, shoot! I guess I'll have to listen to this whole thing and see if I can somehow manage to edit it under the limit. I hit play and began listening to the recording. And I couldn't believe what was playing back to me. This is how much I didn't know the girls in my group. I hadn't even heard their voices before this project. The first part was Renisme's, and she had the thickest, almost undecipherable Asian accent I have ever come across. I really don't mean to be rude or disrespectful or any of that. It's freaking hard to learn a second language. Massive problem. To whoever's bilingual. But come on. My roommate came in and I played her the recording and her facial expression morphed into a, I am both in disbelief and extremely sorry for you. At one part, Blood Rain literally recorded herself on her phone in a car.
Wow, look at this great audio.
What are you doing?
Oh, just recording audio for my final project, nothing much.
I ended up spending 2.5 hours just cutting all our audio down. I think it still ended up being like 5 or 6 seconds over, but I couldn't do anything else about it. And I didn't even have the video portion started. So sparing you all the painful details of how I literally spent the entire day working on the dumb project by myself. No, you know what? Not even by myself. My team was literally tripping me up, making me end up doing more work than if I just did it completely on my own. And you know how I kept saying that I was really busy during the week with other things? Yeah, I meant busy as in every single day leading up to that Friday, I had a major final exam for a different class to do. You guys suck. Just as I started exporting the final project, one of my really good friends came by to see if I wanted to go get something to eat. He noticed how absolutely awful I looked. What happened? I'm dead. I spent what was left in the day with a few of my buddies. Then at 11:30 in the freaking PM, I get a text from none other than Renisme. How's the video going? Wow, I'm glad you're so concerned with the video that you decided to check up on it 30 minutes before the turn-in time. I finished it after 8 hours of editing. Oh, cool. Not even a god flippin' thank you. I literally did the entire project free twats in the span of one day, but I guess a thank you is too much to ask for. My bad, sorry. You know, I'm not an angry person, pretty much the opposite, and I don't like confrontation. As absolutely pissed off as I was at these girls, I honestly didn't have any energy left to rant to them about how they were being literal dirt wipes. So you know what I did instead? I'm the one who's editing the video, right? I'm the one with complete control over what goes into the final project, right? It's a dog-eat-dog world out here, boys. Sometimes the sweetest types of revenge are best executed passive-aggressively after the storm without anyone looking or expecting it. Don't worry, I did end up emailing the professor about this whole thing. Actually, her response was kind of funny and way more dramatic than I expected. I still have it, look. Jaden, thank you for the report, blah blah blah. This is rather serious. Do not contact them. You will not lose credit for your work once they get to the bottom of this, but it is likely they will. P.S. Well done on working hard and persisting in the face of difficulty. If you're curious, I think I ended up getting like an 83 on the project, which I'll take. I just wanted to pass, like... Jesus Christ. I don't know what happened to the other girls or if they failed or not, but I don't care, so that's that. So thanks for watching. Holy crap, this was a long video to animate, like almost 9 freaking minutes. And girls, if you're watching this, I'm sorry, but I hope you failed. Yo, what's up, homesicles? I'm gonna talk about substitute teachers. I wanna say, for the most part, we all like having subs. You, like, walk into the classroom expecting it to be a normal day, and you glance over at the teacher, and boom, it's a sub. Yes, don't have to try today. Most subs are pretty cool. They don't really care too much either, and everyone just ends up having a nice easy break day. They have this attitude like,
okay, so I'm just gonna pop in a movie or something, do whatever you want. I'm just here to make sure you don't all go Miley Cyrus wild and poke some kid's eye out with a ruler.
But sometimes they don't care too much, and it gets kind of weird. Like, once I had a math sub where we were just doing a worksheet or something, and this girl behind me was eating carrots, but all of a sudden, she started choking on one of her carrots and was, like, gasping and gagging and stuff, and everyone turned around and was mortified. What? What do we do? We all looked over at the sub for help and guidance, or something, because of all people, he should have a plan. And he was just looking at her, not doing anything. I'm sure if the girl could have spoke at that time, she would have said, "Freaking, I'm choking on a carrot here! What are you looking at? Do something, you buffoon! Ah!" So for a small period of time, everyone was just helplessly looking at this poor girl choking on a carrot. No one knew what to do! Finally, one guy got up and did the choking Heimlich procedure they teach us. It was so legit! He even did the "are you choking" question like they say you have to. If you haven't heard of the technique, or if for some reason they changed it, the steps are: approach the person and ask, "Are you choking?" Do not proceed if they are not choking. It actually says that. Get behind the person and wrap your arms around their waist. Be ready to support them if they faint. Take your fist and place the thumb side against their belly, just above their belly button. Grab the fist with the other hand and thrust into the belly. And the final step is, repeat thrusts until the object pops out, or until the person faints. So the girl didn't faint. He actually got the carrot out of her throat and everyone was relieved. And after all that hullabaloo, we all kind of looked over to see what the sub had to say about the situation. And nothing. He just watched the situation with a blank slate look on his face. Like, what the heck? What are you? I've never seen less of a reaction from such a big situation from anyone in my entire life. He should make a reaction channel, come to think of it. He'd blend in with most of the people on YouTube doing it already. Anyway, enough with Mr. Blank Slate. I remember when I was in high school, we had kind of a main group of substitutes that were common to have when a teacher called in sick or something. And there was this one old man guy that everyone knew and absolutely hated. And before you say something like, "Oh, Jaden, that's kind of rude to say," in our defense, he hated us too. Whenever a person walked in and saw him sitting behind the teacher's desk, the immediate thought would be, crap, it's gonna be a rough day today. No one had to say it, but we were all thinking it. Okay, Jaden, so what was he like? Oh, stand up so you can sit down, because I'm getting started. Take the strictest person you know and throw them out the window because this guy is now that person. I think he saw himself as a military instructor leading juvenile delinquents because he wanted every child to be behaving perfectly, to a T, no funny business. And yeah, that's not gonna happen in a high school, so there's problem one. He would start every class with the same lecture.
Alright, sit down and zip up because we're taking attendance. If I hear any talking, you're being written up. I don't tolerate jokesters in my classroom. I'm going to call out your last name, followed by your first name. And if I don't hear you say present, then you're being marked absent. You should be paying attention because you only have one chance, and I'm not calling names twice. If I pronounce your name wrong, correct me. Alright, here we go.
He says that exact paragraph every time he starts a class, and I know it because I've had him enough times to have it power washed into my head. I kinda wanna believe he has it written down and framed somewhere in his house so he can proudly look at it before he goes to bed every night. And he actually gets mad if you don't correct him if he says your name wrong. I know from experience. I don't care when people pronounce my name wrong. It happens all the time, I've gotten used to it. So I thought I wouldn't make a big deal out of it.
Animations Jaden.
Here.
Did I say that correctly?
It's close enough.
Correct me next time!
Sorry? He reminds me of if, like, Oscar the Grouch had a pet lemon, but the lemon was expired by 2 months and he keeps forgetting to throw it away. Like, oh crap, the lemon! I'll do it tomorrow. And he doesn't do it tomorrow. So, I'll call him Mr. Yet-To-Be-Thrown-Out Lemon. Just for simplicity. I truly don't know why Mr. Yet-To-Be-Thrown-Out Lemon worked as a substitute teacher, because you could just see the child hatred in his eyes. Somehow, he made everyone in the class feel uncomfortable just by existing. So let me tell you a story about Mr. Yet-To-Be-Thrown-Out Lemon. We had him in a biology class once, and we were just gonna work on a paper he had to pass out.
Alright, we're gonna be doing a worksheet today. If I hear any talking, you're being written up. This is an individual worksheet, so there's absolutely no reason to talk to anyone at all during this hour. Everyone come up to the front of the room right now and grab a paper.
Mrs. Grapes does it so each person at a table has a number, and she calls out a random number, and that person just gets up and gets the paper for the rest of the table, so it's easier to-
I will not have slaves in my classroom!
What did he just say?! This man just compared picking up papers for other classmates to slavery. Slavery! Good God, So we did it his way. The 34 of us all got up at the same time and shuffled to the front of the room, awkwardly squishing together to grab a paper from the one pile he made for us. You are a fruitcake. He did a lot of other weird over-the-top things, but this was by far the best thing I've ever witnessed from him. Oh, Mr. Yet-To-Be-Thrown-Out Lemon, you're a real piece of work.
No talking. I'm going to call out your last name, followed by... Bleh, bleh, bleh. This is an individual worksheet or superfabulous reasons. I will not have slaffles in my classroom.
I don't know what those are.
This is an individual worksheet, so there's a I'm gonna... Metal Gear.
Jaden. Is there a Jaden here? Jaden. Jaden. With animations of Jaden. Is there a...
Animations? Jaden. Jaden, what the
Hey guys, so I'm gonna start doing some Q&A videos so we can all learn about who I am and we can all be connected and friends and stuff. Anyway, okay, so the first question is, how old are you and what made you do animations? So, I've gotten so many questions. Are you in college? Are you in high school? How old are you? I'm 17, I'm in my last year of high school, so I'm going into college next year, but yeah. As for animation-wise, I really have no idea how I got into animation. I've always been drawing ever since I was little, and I just all of a sudden wanted to do animation, so I looked it up, I didn't take any classes, and I taught myself, and I'm not a professional at all. I'm pretty sure I'm doing everything wrong, so I don't think you guys want to learn from me. You should probably learn from a professional like I didn't do. When did you start animating? Now, this is a funny story. I'm sure you've all seen that terrible mother animation that I made for Cupquake, right? Yep, that was my first animation that I ever made in my entire life. Like I said, I'm not a professional at all. I just jumped straight into it. I did my best. I had no idea what I was doing, but it turned out pretty well. And I'm so glad that so many of you had such positive feedback and you loved it and you want more. And that's really what helps me grow as an animator. So thank you. Next question. Do you have anything big planned, like a long video or something? For this channel, no. But, as you guys know, I work for Cupquake, and the animation that we are working on right now is amazing. It's turning out so well, and I think you guys are gonna love it, maybe even more than Terrible Mother and Dino Killer, the other ones that we have out. It's different. It's a lot different from the Minecraft shorts, but it's my favorite out of all of them so far. It's probably not gonna be out for a couple months because it's different. I'm trying not to give you guys any hints, but you're gonna be wanting to watch it 5 days a week. Trust me. Frankly, it's life or death. You have to choose, pick between having hands for feet or feet for hands. Do it at that. Considering that I need my hands to be doing animation and drawing, I'll probably have feet for hands. No, I'm just kidding. Definitely hands for feet, no questions asked. But seriously, I've tried drawing with my feet before, and it is hard. Props to people with no hands, and they have to draw with their feet. Next up, are you ever going to vlog on your YouTube channel? Now, I'm taking this as, what do you look like? And I knew I was gonna get this question eventually, but right now I'm only focusing on getting animations out because that's what I think is really important. I guess I can tell you a little bit on what I look like. My dad is white or Caucasian, and my mom is Japanese, and they both grew up in Canada, so I'm like white, Japanese, Canadian, but I also live in the US, so that's a little bit on my background. But who knows, maybe in the future I'll show you guys what I look like, but for now, no. Why do you make videos for Cupquake? Okay, this is something that a lot of you guys probably are wondering. I used to be just a fan of Cupquake. I just watched their videos, I was just a subscriber. That was it. But one day, I decided to send in a fan art, and they posted it on their channel, and I saw it, and I was like, oh my gosh, they like my art, I should send more. And they started kind of talking a little bit about it, and they also mentioned the fact that they were looking into animating some moments in their videos. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to animate, but I was thinking about learning how to animate. So I sent them a message. I said, hey, I kind of know the basics of animation, and they kind of already knew me by my art. So they're like, okay, what's your email? What's your Skype? Let's get in contact. Let's make this happen. And one thing led to another, and out came Terrible Mother, and you guys loved it so much, we just had to make more, and that's how this whole animation thing started. So that's why I'm telling you guys, you have to get yourself out there, because my whole career basically just started by sending in a fan art. Which is a prime example why you don't know what possibilities are out there. You just need to pop your bubble and form the path that you want to take. What inspires you to draw or animate? And this is a really quick answer. It's you guys. All the support and all the love and comments you guys leave for me is the most inspiration that I could ever have. And you guys don't know this, but I really doubt myself when I make animations. On all my videos so far, I've always been working on it in the middle of working, and I just think to myself, I don't even know if this is funny. I don't even think that you guys are gonna like this. And I think about just starting over and doing something else, but I just post it and all the comments are so nice. There's a little bit of criticism, but it's like really good criticism, and it's like, maybe you should do this, and it's really nice, and you're all so polite, and that's really what inspires me. So as long as you guys help support this channel and me, then you guys are definitely gonna be getting more animations. So thank you guys. I wanna also thank you guys for 13,000 subscribers in 2 months. I have no words. That's beautiful. Thank you guys so much. Well, that's all the questions I'm going to answer for this video. Make sure to like the video and subscribe if you haven't. Also, if you want to be updated on the channel, know when I'm taking questions for more Q&A videos, or even getting a day in advance notification on when I'm posting an animation, follow me on Twitter at JadenAnimation, and check out my DeviantArt where I post some of my drawings. Anyway, thanks for all the support and all the love, and I'll see you again later. Bye!
For people who have been around for a while, you might be seeing the title and thinking, Jaden, aren't you allergic to cats? And to that, I'd say, yes. Kind of. I'm actually not sure anymore. And for the people who know anything about me, you might see the title and think, Jaden, cats are literally the number one natural predator to birds. And to that, I also say, yes, that one's 100% proven fact. So let me back up a bit and explain how we got here, because all the cards in the world were stacked against the idea of me getting a cat. Growing up, I was irrefutably and absolutely allergic to cats. My best friend had like three of the things, and every time I would hang out or sleep over at her house, I would be a sneezy, watery-eyed, snotty mess. Can I have some water? Given the fact my brother was also allergic to cats, it was set that we were a dog family. My whole life I went around not giving cats a second thought. I never had anything actually against them, but since I was forced to stay 20 feet away from them or suffer the consequences, I just couldn't get to know them. Plus, as a kid, dogs were always more appealing. They're more likely to be bigger fans of playing and running around, be more approachable with their genetically bred unconditional love, and can overall be more forgiving. Cut to like two catless decades for me later, and I'm meeting Jacob for the first time at his place. As we're hanging out in his living room, his cat Frasier comes over and greets me. Frasier is extremely social and vain, so he's always expecting nothing less than a never-ending stream of attention from the people. Even though he's very cute and distinguished, I deployed my typical foolproof plan of don't touch the cat. Frasier realizes he's not getting any attention out of me and sits down nearby on the couch. But a bit later, Jacob's other cat ends up making an appearance. This one's Taylor. She's normally really shy and hides, but does really like women, which I am. Taylor ended up crawling onto me and making herself really comfy in my womanly lap. Jacob, knowing I'm allergic, offered to take her away, but this was actually the first time a cat has ever done something like this to me. I've always been a bit of a cat magnet, if you want to call it that, because I act like they don't exist, which they interpret as me not pushing their boundaries and creating a comfortable environment for them to come up to me on their own terms, but never have I felt like a cat has chosen me like this before. I told Jacob I'm happy to let her stay comfortable on me, and I'll just reap the consequences of my sowing later on. This was my first extremely positive experience with the cat, and I honestly felt really happy and special and wanted to enjoy it. A few hours later, I'm saying my goodbyes, and during the drive back home, I realized I was completely fine. No sneezing, no itchy eyes, straight up nothing. I was so confused and curious. Thus, the start of my little cat experiment began. Every time I went over to Jacob's place, I would let the cats be as social as they wanted with me. If Taylor wanted to sit by me, I'd let her. If Frasier wanted attention, I would pet him. At one point, while we were watching a movie, Taylor literally decided to lay down on my neck, filling every one of my breaths with cat dander and hair. And you know what happened? No reaction! Not even a little drip of mucus! Somehow, sometime, I'd grown out of my cat allergy and never noticed. Apparently, every 7 years, people's allergies have the chance to change. Maybe being surrounded by my friends' cats all throughout my childhood could have helped my body get more familiar with them. Either way, I've now unlocked the skill to survive cats. Oh, guys, it was incredible. Now that I'd been freed from my shackles, I immediately started taking time to get to know cats more. Instantly, they felt so much more cute and cool and approachable, and I was really starting to like them more, especially since every time I would hang out at Jacob's place, Taylor would walk over and be around me and purr, and oh, it was amazing to be loved by a cat. So I really like cats now. And after some time, I decided I wanted one too. Jacob and I decided to peruse a local cat rescue's website just to see what cats were available. I don't want to get one right away. There's a lot I have going
going on, but it doesn't hurt to- Oh my god, that one! I want that one so bad, it's so cute! What's his name? Tostada? Tostada! Tostada, my beloved! We have to send in an application, we have to! Hi, my name's Jaden, I love this cat, please let me adopt it! Please, 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 please! What? You guys know me. I'm weak-willed and impulsive. My first mistake was liking cats to begin with. The rescue reached out a few days later for a cat screening interview to make sure we would be a good fit to be cat parents. After being approved, they told us we could pick any cat we wanted that was in their care. Of course I asked about Tostada, but we were given the unfortunate news that she had already been adopted. No! We looked at the other cats available on their website, but unfortunately, none of them really stood out to me. The rescue ended up inviting us to a little Meet the Cats event they were hosting where we could see all the cats they had up for adoption in person, which was awesome because that was actually the first time I'd ever actually seen and held a kitten before. It was amazing. But as cute and tiny as they all were, there still wasn't one that called to me. I pried Jacob away from the kittens, headed home, and we started waiting. Every day I would check the rescue's cat list to see if any new ones caught my eye. I didn't even know what I was looking for, but waited for the universe to send me my perfect cat nonetheless. One morning I refreshed the page and saw one new kitten added. A tortie they found in some dumpster named Scrabble, with the biggest eyes and forehead I'd seen in my life. Something about this bizarre little creature called to me. I messaged the rescue about Scrabble, and they told me she's available, putting me in touch with Scrabble's foster parents. Every day, they sent me new little pictures of kitten Scrabble, and every photo I fell more and more in love with her. She seemed so silly and playful and those eyes. We got on a video call and they told me all about how big of a personality she has. Out of the five other kittens they were fostering, she was by far their favorite. The whole time we were talking, Scrabble was flipping around in their arms and looking at the camera with her giant orbs. I left that call knowing I found my cat. I needed to have little kitten Scrabble. Meeting her in person only cemented it. She was shy at first, but after flinging around her worm toy, she immediately started hopping around and being the life of the party. I talked a lot to her foster parents, and they just gushed about how they wished they could keep her since they all loved her so much. Even though the rescue called her Scrabble, obviously that was more of a placeholder name, the foster parents called her Cammy, but neither of those really fit to me. However, I knew one name that I liked. Tostada. Yeah, I stole another kitten's name and pasted it on mine. So what? Big deal. Tostada is a great name. My Tostada is way more of a Tostada than the other Tostada anyway. Look at her. I would have left with little Tostada in my arms that moment if I could. But unfortunately, Jacob and I were going out of town for 3 million weeks and had to wait to take her home until after we came back. She was all I could think about the entire time. I was shoving Tostada photos in everyone's face every chance I got. The foster parents were sending Tostada updates every day. I was overflowing with yearning for this cat. She was growing and learning about the world without me. Take me home to my child. Literally, the moment Jacob and I landed, we drove straight from the airport to the foster home to pick her up. I could not wait. We arrived home with plus one Tostada. I couldn't believe it. I have a mammal now. And sorry, other mammal owners, but it's the best mammal in the whole wide universe. Jacob and I spent the entire day playing with her, letting her get used to her new surroundings. She was so cute and so tiny. Here's a video of her eating wet food with a big old chomp. As someone who's owned birds for 7 years at that point, it felt so strange to have a pet that was significantly less fragile. And also draws significantly less blood. You mean this thing can't fly up and get hit by the ceiling fan? Insane! I've had Tostada for a while now. She's 2 years old at the time of me posting this. And let me tell you, this thing has become a creature. First of all, eyes, still giant. And she never blinks. Look at this. She was sitting on my desk looking like that long enough for me to notice, get my phone out of my pocket, pull up the camera app, put the camera in her face, and take a photo. And here's like four more. She is also not that smart. I'm sure you could deduce that by how she looks, but this thing has a single brain cell and it's just another version of herself up there with a joystick. Jacob and I are fully convinced she can only form a few thoughts a day and only in single word nouns. Evidently, Tostada is also very scared of everything. Always has been. Loud noises, quiet noises, no noises, movement of any kind. Even Jacob, a person she's been around all her little life post-dumpster. There's been times where he'll be at his desk, moves his chair just a smidge, and she's darting out of the room. One time we were trying to explain to some friends how skittish she genuinely can be, and demonstrated it by grabbing a toy literally in front of her, raising it up a bit, lightly dropping it on the floor, still in front of her, and she bolted. You know how cats are genetically built to be good at balancing? Well, Tostada can't even do that. She trips and falls and misplaces her feet all the time. On multiple occasions, she has tried to walk across my L-shaped desk and just missed and fell down. That's like the one thing that makes a cat, and nope, doesn't hit the mark there either. She's gotten better, but as a kitten, Tostada couldn't even jump. After I built her first cat tower, I watched as she attempted to jump up to the second level, not quite make it, and had to slam her arms down on the thing to hoist herself up like she was mountain climbing. But oh, is she the sweetest little thing. When I got a cat, I was expecting it to want its own space, come around when it wants, you know, general cat things. But this creature follows me from room to room with those high beams of hers. She sits on my lap while I'm at my computer, lays on my giant Pokemon plushes, mostly just looks up at me from the floor and just stares. When I'm sleeping, she'll just crawl into bed and tuck herself up right next to me. Look at all these photos of her straight up on me when I'm sleeping. Don't look too close though, I don't have makeup on. Bedtime is sacred to her. She loves bedtime. If I'm working late, Tostada will come into my office around 9 or 10 p.m., aka past Tostada bedtime, and just start crying, scratching on my chair, rolling around on the floor. It's pitiful. And if I still don't move after that, she'll go into the bedroom and drag over her string toy she always plays with. It's just so sad and pathetic. I always play string with her when she brings it over though, don't worry. But lately, she's picked up another routine habit, which is pats. Not all cats like the pats, but Tostada lives off them. It's when you just slap a cat's butt and it looks like you're hurting them, but they actually love it. However, Tostada's really particular about pats. First of all, I'm the only one allowed to give her pats. Jacob has tried and she runs away scared and offended every single time. Second, she has to receive pats on a specific spot on the floor of the closet. If I try to give her pats in, like, my office, she bolts to her floor spot, staring at me to continue them over there. Also, she begs to be pat every single night. Like clockwork, she'll sit like a gargoyle in front of the closet and cry pitifully until I come over there. Now, when I finally come over for pats, she'll flop on the floor and start horizontally rock climbing her way across the floor with her claws and tangle herself up in the Ethernet cables while I keep up the pats. You think I'm joking, but I'm very much not. This is the only way she accepts pats, and I have to give them to her every night or else she's miserable. Tostada's world is so small. She's really just around me, Jacob, Taylor, and Frasier, but she loves her simple family so much. When kitten Tostada first met Frasier, she was terrified of him. She'd been around other adult cats before, but she'd never seen a flat cat in her life, and she was mortified. Of course, she's since warmed up to him, and they play together and hang out all the time, they're best friends. But Tostada loves Taylor. Always has. She looks up to Taylor like a little baby sister admiring her cool, awesome older sibling. Unfortunately, Taylor hates it. They literally have a SpongeBob Squidward type of sibling relationship, and Tostada is so oblivious to it. Taylor has annoyingly swatted at Tostada so many times just for existing around her that Tostada now thinks it's a fun little game they play and will start chasing and swatting back at Taylor happily, not understanding cat social cues. Of course, never in a way that's too far, but just enough to get on Taylor's nerves even more. Between the three three of them, they all have such different little personalities and relationships to each other. It's made our lives so much more entertaining. And to anyone concerned about the birds, don't worry. I've got Ari and Tofu very separated from the cats. They're safe in their own blocked-off room connected by a double door system that ensures no possible interaction between bird and cat. If anyone is thinking about getting cats and birds as pets, it is possible, but just make sure the two are very separate, especially if you have smaller birds like conures or budgies. I'm sure there's people out there that have trained their cats to be fine around a pet bird, but to me, all it takes is one accident or attack for you to just not have a bird anymore. Plus, having the two of them takes a huge amount of time and commitment. I've said it before and I'll say it forever, I love my birds to death, but they do not make good pets for the very large majority of people. In terms of allergies, I do think I was originally still a little bit allergic to Tostada, ironically. When I first got her, I was sneezy and sniffling. Nothing allergy pills couldn't fix, and it never was as bad as my original cat allergy. But I think I've been growing out of that one too, because nowadays I don't have any reaction to her at all. Bodies are a mystery. I am building my immunity to everything. Next up is rat poison. I didn't think I would make a video talking about this thing, but Tostada's just got such a funny little personality and has become such a big part of my life. She may be the description of autism, but I love her more than the world itself, and I know I'm the center of her little life too. I don't even see her as a cat. She's just a little creature that follows me around looking weird, but I love it, and I'm so glad I grew out of my cat allergy just so I can have her. It really has been so different owning a cat, mainly because I know Tostada won't just bite me at any given chance, unlike some avian creatures. Thanks for watching the video. Heads up, I'm going to be announcing new merch again soon, so be on the lookout for that. The last drop went so well, and I'm really glad that so many of you guys enjoyed it. I'm so excited to finally be getting back into making fun merch, and it really helps me out a lot. Alright, sorry, thanks. Anyway, I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
What I want to say.
Should we clap sync?
Yeah, let's do that. That's a better start.
that can be your opener. Yeah. Ready? 1, 2,
people like,
three.
What the heck? Oh, wait. I was laughing. Sorry. Hello, everyone. I'm Jaden. See, this is my attempt at an intro, but I'm not alone because I'm with Jazza from Brand Jazza. If you don't know him, he's an art guy.
Hi, I'm an art guy.
He does, like, animation tutorials, drawing tutorials. It's pretty great.
Thank you so much.
People don't know this, but when I started animating or wanting to learn how to animate, I used his videos to learn how to animate.
That's awesome.
So it's like coming full circle. It's so weird. So if you ever say like, Shaden, how do you animate? Go bother him. So,
well,
yeah.
Welcome over to my channel. Anyone who wants to bother me, but thank you so much for having me here today. I'm a huge fan. I love the way you tell your stories. It's really fun.
Thank you.
So, yeah, it's an honor for me.
Mutual respect.
Yeah, mutual respect five.
Clap. We made a drawing challenge. At least we think we made it. I haven't seen anyone else do this before. We're going to switch off drawing something, but I'm going to be an evil, like, devil, and I have to, like, ruin everything, yeah. And then... Jazza, he's like the nice, kind, sweet, giving angel who turns a bad situation into a good one. We already recorded me being the angel and him being the devil on his channel, so after
it,
this...
I have to say, I was saying in the video, actually, it sounds much easier to be the devil than the angel. It's like, okay, all you have to do is ruin the other person's work, but in reality, it's actually quite hard, so...
I'm not the best at being evil.
Alright, what I want to begin the story with is Bob. And Bob's a really swell guy. He's actually heading off to his new job as an accountant. He graduated from accountant school.
Accountant college.
Is that a thing?
I'm sure it could be.
All right. Well, he just graduated from accountant college. New shoes. Look at these shoes.
That is a confident walk, might I say.
Aside from a swell walk, he's got this happy, bubbly little family. Little baby with a, what do you call them? We call them dummies. Is that what you call them?
Are you calling babies dumb?
No. We don't call... Wait, I meant... I meant this thing. The thing in the baby's mouth.
Oh, like a pacifier?
Yeah.
A dummy. Australia thing?
I guess. I don't know if they do it in the UK as well.
I thought you just flat out called the baby dumb.
No. We have a toddler and he calls it his dum-dum.
Oh.
Little international confusion here, but there's this gorgeous little baby with a pacifier and a really happy wife who also has work later that day because she is a politician. Everyone loves him, and in particular, this accountant guy is excited because he's starting his first day at work after accountant school.
They do all look very happy. I'll have to spoil that in a bit.
There's a sign on her lawn saying, "Vote for me."
Vote for me. Take note, politicians. This is how you win the majority.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm just going to wrap it up there. Hand it over to you.
Here it is. Move the trash open. That's how I ruin it. I just move it to the trash.
Just delete it.
It's the ultimate. Like, I just killed three people. So, it looks like a big old happy family. But little do you know, you drew Sonic shoes, which means this man is Sonic. And he is running away from...
Commitment?
Bye. Sonic is wearing a nice tie because he thought he was getting going on a blind date with this woman. He did his hair, so that's his little hair thing. But the reason he's running away from this, it looks like a woman, but it's actually Eggman.
Oh my god! Who dresses up during the day in disguises as a political woman in a small town.
He's like, vote for me. He's trying to win the heart of the city and Sonic at the same time. Two birds with one stone. The truth would come out.
How long were they married before they figured this out?
Oh, they weren't married. It was a blind date.
Oh, I see. And they had a child. How do you explain that one?
No, here, I have a reason for this as well. Eggman always has his robots and the baby is secretly a robot. And
I don't know how to save this.
Destruction. I don't know what Robotnik does, but I think it's like machines and stuff, so I'm gonna give him like evil claw hands. He's actually got Sonic, and that's why he can't run anywhere. He got him by the head. Like, he's trying to run, his feet are going. But it's like a treadmill. He can't run.
My turn. Let's do this. Okay, well, the rage, the pure fury with which Sonic is hit with in this moment of terror, the only moment in his life where he's not been able to run, has him reeling, and out of nowhere, these powers course through his veins. This is a lot of reconfiguring. You have to, like remove a lot before you can add anything.
First, I was like, hey, you're just deleting all my stuff.
No. There's
I think I know what
there's a strategy here. All right. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Sonic the Hedgehog's true heritage was revealed, and his blue hair courses. And Dr. Robotnik is cowering in fear as Bob, aka Sonic, the Saiyan, is revealing his true power. All the time that Dr. Robotnik thought he had Sonic in his grasp, Saiyan Sonic was building a spirit bomb. And good shall triumph forever. Good luck. Oh, and he's still running for office, but
you see. So it looks all fine and dandy. The day is almost saved. However, Mr. Eggman, or Dr. Eggman, Professor Eggman, is not alone. He called someone up. Oh, his mustache is in the way. Help, SOS, I can't do this alone when the power's too strong. Vegeta is coming for him. I haven't watched Dragon Ball Z. I think his hair's like this. It's very
spiky. I'll get you, Kakarot.
That's my Vegeta voice.
He's like, hey, you can't do that. This is my show. You, hey you. You're breaking.
Vegeta shows up and is like, stop it.
Stop. I'm gonna.
Just stop it.
I'm shaking my fist. I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna hurt. Oh, he's really muscly, isn't he? You can't. Oh, geez, anatomy.
I didn't know they were friends with characters from Sonic, though. That's new to me.
It's all related. They have coffee after they record their episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they fly, but I'm going to give them
little wings on their shoes.
This guy, he's like, even though he's like, oh no.
He's, by the way, he's had a very optimistic outlook the whole time up until now.
Now it's
he's
like
just
the...
been, whatever's happening, he's just there smiling like a doofus.
Yeah, now he's like, uh-oh. It's like the awkward smile. We're like, yeah. Oh, shoot. There's like an evil purple guy, right?
What, you mean like Frieza?
The purple guy. I don't know what he looks like.
I grew up thinking Frieza was a girl because, I don't know, that was his high-pitched voice and, like, smaller than everyone.
I never knew what he looks like. So I'm going to draw him as Mewtwo. Mewtwo and Frieza have merged together. The cartoon anime timelines are in shambles at this moment. Everything is in chaos. Everything is not... going as it should be.
Uh-huh.
See, I can draw much better than this, but...
I love... We both have entire audiences who follow us based on our art.
Yeah.
And it's like...
And then I
why would
stuff
we
like this?
Bother making good art?
Since everything is so in shambles, the television itself...
Is this just getting super meta right now?
This is the TV, and it's an old TV. It's got the antennas. They broke... Oh, shoot.
Oh,
I gotta select
God.
All the layers. No. So the TV is broken now, and the kid, he's watching the show. He's like, Mom, something happened.
Right. I have a lot to work with.
Yeah. How did this start with the sales?
Yeah, this started off with just some guy going to work. Little do you know, these kids watching the TV, the sadness that they're experiencing, oh God, is only there because the show ended. The good news is the reason they were watching this show is because they were a focus group by a group of developers and scientists. These are scientist glasses. They're taking notes. They've struck gold. The best TV show and story arc that has been developed by humanity. Scientifically proven, not only are they going to make a huge amount of money with this, but they're going to inspire generations. Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z ain't got nothing on this. There happen to be a bunch of other scientists as well.
There's a dress code.
There's definitely a dress code, but they have they obviously have different hairstyles. Let me just address that quickly. This guy has an afro and a handlebar mustache.
Oh, he's like a biker guy.
Yeah, slash disco. We're in the 80s alternate timeline.
Oh, so he just came back from a disco party, and now he's back to work?
Yeah, well, I mean, they have to have a work-life balance, and these people are really just, you know, genuinely well-balanced people. Okay. Okay, cool. But beyond that, not only have they developed TV shows so awesome that children around the world are going to be bursting with joy. These are all the other children, all like looking at the people like, where's more? I want more of my show.
So this
is amazing.
Like the pilot episode?
Yep. This is like, okay, we got it. This is perfect. Beyond that, there were other scientists, hang on a sec, of a particularly similar group in the background. developing an immortal television that awesomeness cannot break. The perfect television and the perfect television series. So awesome that lives will be changed and people will be inspired for eons. One of these children in the audience is so inspired, their intellect is so raised by the show that they go on to cure cancer and AIDS. That's the happy emoji color.
So because of that show, cancer has been cured.
Yeah, and AIDS.
I think that's all we're going to be doing for this round. If I were to... should I try and just think of a comeback devil thing?
How about you try and describe why this is not a happy ending to counter my argument, and maybe we put it to a vote. What do you reckon?
All right, let me think about this. So what you are seeing here is what the public is seeing, but this is what the scientists only want you to believe is happening. These scientists are evil, and they have imprisoned these children and are numbing their minds with this hypnotizing TV show that will turn their brain to mush, and they will be enslaved for the rest of their life.
Wow. My question is, did Bob get to work?
So I'm going to put a card in the video where you can click it and it'll take you to the poll and you can vote. Is this actually a good ending or is it a bad ending?
I'm going to scunge for points right here. Can you see this depth of field? Look at this.
It got pretty good.
That is is this? Is I feel like I get cinematography.
Yeah.
And it's so different from the other story we did, which you can see on my channel, but like how fast they escalate and weird they get
so
quickly.
Like, I had a lot of fun. The other video we did was crazy fun too. If you haven't seen Jazz's channel or his video, go over and check it out. He's like super awesome, really informative and funny.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for coming on to the video.
Thanks for having me. I love your channel, and huge hello and thank you to your audience for tolerating me.
Thank you for coming on, and bye everyone.
See you later.
Hey guys, I know it's been a while since I've had a story to tell, but I have a story to tell. And it's because my birds accidentally laid eggs together without my consent. Okay, so let's back up. I'm sure the majority of you know this guy right here, Ari. Classic piece in the Jaden Animations lore. If you don't know him, you don't know me. I keep Ari in his own room because he destroys literally anything if he has access to it. In a way, you could call it a containment room. But when I'm not around to give him attention, I wanted to make sure he has a friend around and isn't just sitting there all alone and pitiful-like. So back in October 2019, I got Tofu, which, oh my god, I'm just realizing is much longer ago than I thought. Tofu, I thought you were still just a baby. She definitely isn't as well known as Ari, but we're talking about her now. I was so nervous back when Tofu first arrived because I obviously hadn't gotten any other pets before, and it was really important that she and Ari actually got along. Birds can be pretty particular, and some just flat out hate each other for no apparent reason. Some sort of bird drama or something, I don't know. I was worried my birds were gonna mean girls each other, and then suddenly I'd have two singular birds, which then doubles my original problem. I went through the typical process you're supposed to do to introduce them, keep them in separate areas for a bit, let them kinda see each other, slowly introduce them in small doses, and suddenly they were best friends. I was so happy. Plan B of having to get four birds was now not necessary. So great, everything was going according to plan. I have two birds that can keep each other company when I'm not around. Nothing could possibly go wrong when there's a pair of animals that get along very well. It was a peaceful, happy 3 years of two birds who were besties until this past spring where everything went wrong. How could this happen? I walked into the birds' room to give them their morning food, and on their dresser, I find three tiny little eggs. And by the way, when I say tiny, I mean you would be shocked to see how small bird eggs can be. These things were the size of a quarter. Some of you may be thinking, Jaden, why is this a bad thing? Jaden, it's the gift of life. This is a beautiful moment of miracles. Okay, sure, but actually, no. First of all, I don't want more birds. Especially fragile little fresh out the egg ones. Remember when I was worried I'd have to get four birds if Ari and Tofu didn't like each other? Why am I experiencing the same dilemma again? Two birds is already enough, especially since one of them has devoted his entire life to being a full-time bastard. Anyone who has a gremlin pet understands that that creature is equal to, like, three pets worth of energy. It's a lot to handle at all times, and if my plate gets any more full, I'll unlock alcoholism. Second of all, this is now my problem that I need to handle ASAP. I can't be like, oh, I'm busy right now, I'll deal with it later. No, procrastinating would only lead to possible hatching. Not 100%, but there's a chance, I'll get to that later. Which leads back to my prior statement that I've stated multiple times at this point of I don't want more birds. Immediately, I was like, how did this happen? I've been preventing them from laying eggs together for so long. What changed? Unlike cats and dogs, birds can't really be neutered, at least not easily. You could give them like monthly hormone shots or there's other stuff, but it's just really complicated. And you're better off simply making sure their environment is set up in a way to discourage nesting and egg laying behavior. There's a few things you could do to prevent it, but to sum things up, basically, don't let the birds nest. If they find a dark little hidey hole, they'll start treating it like a nest and get hormonal, and suddenly you've got eggs. No nesting, for the most part, no problem. I looked around the room and was so confused. All they had in there were their cages, climbing tree, and a drawer I bought to hold all their bird stuff. And the eggs were just on the top of the drawer too, not even in a safe, burrowed, nest-like place. One had already rolled off the side and cracked open on the floor like an omelet. Tofu, this is not even close to motherly instincts. After a bit of snooping around, I pulled the drawer back from the wall to realize, oh my god, these birds have been secretly burrowing into the back of this drawer like they were plotting a prison escape. Somehow, Ari and Tofu squeezed their tiny bodies in between the drawer and the wall and started chewing the back of it to get into the drawers from behind. They literally gnawed through it like the nematodes in SpongeBob. You should have seen all the sawdust on the floor. Well, here's a picture, but it doesn't do it justice. It looked like a construction site and smelled like Home Depot. Suddenly, it made sense. They were using the drawer as a secret nest. Whenever I was in the room, they were out and about. Hi, Mom, please give us seeds. Nothing nefarious is going on. I leave, and boom, straight to the forbidden nesting drawer they go. Criminals. As I'm connecting the dots on how we got to this point, I realize I don't even know which one of these knuckleheads even laid the eggs. When I got Tofu, I made sure she was a girl. A little lady. I talked to one of my bird knowledgeable friends when I was considering getting another, and she recommended a female bird because there was a higher chance Ari would get along with her more than a male bird. So Tofu has been DNA checked and female certified. However, way back when I got Ari, I never got him slash her checked. Green cheek conure genders can only be confirmed through DNA tests, and there wasn't really any important reason to know Ari's gender at the time. So I just didn't. Over the years, I've just started calling him my big man because of the way he acted and behaviors he displayed felt very obnoxiously masculine. But it was always more of a gut feeling above anything else. But I am now facing a possible reality that my bird I've had for 7 years that I've been headcanoning is male, could have been female this whole time, and is the potential mother of these confusing eggs. Because, yes, birds don't need a male around to lay eggs. Think about it like chickens. They just be laying eggs out the wazoo without a rooster in sight. They don't care. Boom, egg. If it's a girl bird, that thing can-